Michelle Roberts has joined us here on Sports Byline. Did you have any trepidations when you got serious about going after this position, Michelle?
I've never had similar trepidations in my professional life before, but I was concerned about how I'd be received as a woman. You know, I'm not naive. I knew full well that I would be a curiosity, because it was my understanding then, and it remains my understanding, that this is a very close club. And so I was concerned not about my ability to do the job because I was a woman, but about the players' willingness to be receptive to even the possibility of having their union managed by a woman. And so, you know, I worried about it, and then I stopped worrying about it. But I knew I had to confront it. And so in the numerous meetings I had with players, both in one-on-one, I'd have smaller meetings, individual meetings, and then finally large meetings, I immediately, if not within the first 15 minutes of the conversation, said, let's talk about the pink elephant in the room. and the good news is that my concerns were for naught. These men respect quality and talent and intelligence and commitment, and they routinely and consistently said, we do not care about the fact that you are a woman. All we care about is if you're competent. And we were off to the races.
Yeah, one of the quotes was she could identify with us. And when you think about the background of the African-American player in the NBA and many of them coming from your type of background, I would think that that would be a great comfort factor to them.
I think so. I know that for me it is the case that part of my attraction to this job, not all of it, but a great part of my attraction to the job is my own sense of an affinity with these men. Those that share my background, for sure. Those that share my background and are clearly now very successful, for sure. Even those that don't share my background, that weren't poor, I understand that each and every one of these guys has defied the odds by making it into the NBA in the first place. And I frankly believe that I, too, have defied the odds. I mean, who would have thought? I mean, the good bet on my life was that you're single-parent home, you're poor, you're black, you're a woman. Let's see, you'll have five kids by the time you're 25. You may not be married. You'll probably be a crackhead. The notion of getting a professional degree, right? So these guys now, they've done it at a different space, on a different level, and I applaud them. But it is exactly what draws me to these guys, that their hard work, commitment, sense of achievement, I applaud. I've always been furious when I would hear people before I got this job complain or criticize the players as being, you know, hoodlums or spoiled athletes, overpaid, because I always understood how much of a sacrifice they had to make to get here. So that's my sense of kinship with them, and I think they, on some level, have a similar sense of kinship with me.
I'm wondering about your philosophy when it comes to negotiations. What I mean by that is everybody always puts things in terms of either black or white or winning or losing. When it comes to negotiations, is that necessarily the case? Does one side have to win, the other has to lose?
It's not a negotiation if one side has to win, the other has to lose. It's either, if it's a negotiation, then everyone understands you're not going to get everything that you want. It sounds trite, but it's not black or white, it's gray. The one thing that I've always understood was going to be the case in any negotiations I engage in is either you agree you're going to have a deal, or you agree you're going to blow it up. The one thing that I know no one wants to do in this context is blow it up. The game is in great shape. The fans couldn't be happier right now. We're in the middle of one of the most exciting finals I've seen. So we're not going to blow it up, which means we have to make a deal. And in my conversations with the commissioner going forward, it will be, okay, we know we've got to have a deal. Even if you lock me out, you're going to have a deal. And we don't want that. So let's find out what gives me less heartburn and what gives you less heartburn, and figure out a way that we can go back to our respective parties and say, like, this is the best deal we could get under the circumstances. My sense is, in other words, if you know you're going to make a deal, then make a deal.
Yeah. Do you also sense that maybe the challenge will be a little bit greater this time around, Michelle, because there was the 2011 lockout. The players' share of basketball-related income declined from 57% to 50%. Maximum guarantee contracts were shortened, and harsher penalties leveled on teams that exceeded the salary cap. I mean, it seems like everything backtracked. You get the job, and now you're trying to make up for that.
Yeah, well, what I'm trying to do is get a deal that is a little less unbalanced than the last one. You know, there were circumstances that presumably justified what the owners insisted they needed in the last CBA negotiation. And as I wasn't there, of course, but as I understand it, the owners were referencing what was a poor economy. 2008, everybody agrees, was a nightmare. And the projection was that things were not going to get much better too soon. Well, obviously, the good news is that they were wrong. You know, revenues have shot up and are going to shoot up even more with the new TV deal. Gate receipts are way up. Viewership is way up even with these finals. So it's a different environment. There's a lot more money. One would think, therefore, we should agree that we don't have to do things like lockout or walkout. We've got a huge pile. Let's talk about ways to split it up that don't, you know, have the specter of a poor economy in the background. So it should logically be an easier environment. Logically, it should be an easier environment. So we'll see. I mean, I think if we all agree to act like grown-ups and you know, understand that everybody's going to be able to make more money, let's not make the fans even more suspicious of people's motives, then I think we'll be fine. And one of the reasons why we've agreed to try to start negotiations sooner rather than later is that we can see if we can work whatever it has to be worked out well in advance of the time it takes, the time that's set for announcing an opt-out. So we'll see. I mean, it should be a happy problem that we've got all this money. It should not be something that's going to even further divide the owners and the players.
You know, it's very interesting. I've been doing sports for a long period of time, and I never thought I'd see an owner like Joe Lacob, who buys a franchise for a little bit more than $450 million. Then you look at the Clippers bought for what they were bought for.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. And do you feel the players in the NBA are really coming to kind of a crossroads moment with the explosion of existing and new revenues, potential worldwide expansion, and also the overwhelming increase in those franchise valuations?
I think people don't realize just how well schooled the guys are in the business of basketball. You know, they have been of the opinion, as I understand it, for years that the owners may either deliberately or foolishly undervalued the value of these teams. And the good, you know, I always say this about the Sterling debacle. That was the best thing that ever happened to basketball in some regards because it put the lie. I don't want to say lie, that's too harsh, but it certainly did make clear what Forbes at least was saying for years, and that is that these teams are very valuable. And so the guys are aware both of what these franchises are worth. They're aware of, again, the explosion in gate receipts. They watch what's happening internationally and see the crazy, crazily growing and evolving interest in the game all over the place. And so to the extent, and I hope this doesn't happen, and I don't believe it will, to the extent the owners attempt to cry poverty during this newest upcoming round of CBA negotiations, they will lose absolute credibility, I think, not only with the players, but I suspect with the greater basketball community, because everyone knows these teams are worth a lot of money.
I need to ask you as a follow-up off of what you just said about Sterling, what do you think we learned from that incident?
Well, you know, I think a number of things. I apart from the fact that we learned that these teams are valuable, I think what I hope we learned was that there's a responsibility that at least the members of the basketball community have to each other. The owners cannot, and I think, and I'm not suggesting that they do, but I certainly know that they know they cannot ever publicly. And, you know, what you do privately is your business, but publicly disrespect the players. The players are not chattel. They are not the help. They are, as Commissioner Silver likes to say, partners. And so there is I've had conversations with several owners, and sometimes we touch on Sterling and sometimes we don't. But the one thing I think most of the owners try to communicate to me is their regard and respect for the players. And so anything, any conduct that disrespects the players should and will be frowned upon. It will not be tolerated by the players. And if it's a matter of racism, or in the case of my women, sexism, or any comment or conduct that seeks to disrespect the players, there's no place for it in our community, and it won't be and will not be tolerated. So I hope that's the lesson of Sterling. That's certainly what I've tried to impart, as for me being the lesson.
Michelle, I want to thank you very much. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I hope we can keep it going from time to time, because I think there's a lot of things to be learned here, and certainly communication is the key to anything that comes out well for everybody. I want to thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Michelle Roberts, again, accomplished and well-respected attorney, but also the first woman to head a major American professional sports union. And she also said, in the end, I want my clients to be happy. We continue on Sports Byline.